No, I no buggy
they,
woodmakers.
I think they're pretty much a
thing
of
if
the
they
past.
Want to know how to start a business, we'll tell them about how to market it and how to sell themselves.
Okay.
Great.
So,
great.
All right. Bill, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Bill.
Okay. Folks, we're heading out. Thanks for staying with us. Art, thank you for co-hosting with me today.
It was my pleasure. This was a treat.
Yeah, and that was a. We hope you got as much out of this program as Art and I did.
Right.
So have a great week. Hopefully the rain will cease at some point in time when we return to spring, and we will see you next Wednesday. Be well.
USA Radio News.
Currently at the White House, President Donald Trump is holding a roundtable with lawmakers from California. Let's take a listen to a portion of what's going on at the White House.
Now, we have started the wall. We're spending $1.6 billion between fixing and starting. You know, Melissa, what's been going on. We're getting it up. We have a lot of folks in California. They don't talk about it, but they want the wall up, and they're very happy. That's one of the reasons we started in California, but we've made a lot of progress on it. And now we're going for the full funding for the wall, and we're going to try and get that as soon as possible. But it's become a very popular issue.
Senate Democrats emerged victorious in Wednesday's showdown on net neutrality by winning a 52-47 vote to undo the FCC's December repeal of the Obama-era net neutrality rules. The bill will head to the House floor, where it looks like it will have a tricky time passing. This is USA Radio News.
Posting your job opening to an online job search site is like drinking from a fire hose. You get more resumes than you know what to do with. Robert Half is the better way to hire. Our candidates are interviewed and custom matched to your exact hiring requirements. Quickly, satisfaction guaranteed. So what you need is just what you'll get. Robert Half, the experts in accounting, finance, IT, legal, marketing, and administrative staffing. Learn more at roberthalf.com/radio.
Allergy sufferers, my name's Nigel. As a wise and educated owl, I know the difference between what's wise and unwise. Suffering needlessly with allergy symptoms, unwise. Getting a free 10-day sample of Zizol, quite wise. Zizol is the allergy medicine that's just as effective at hour 24 as at hour 1, which makes getting a free 10-day sample one of the wisest things you can do. So don't be unwise. Be wise all and visit Zizol.com for your free sample today. Use as directed.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. This is your host, David Lazar, recording live from Hunterdon County, New Jersey. The weather here is pretty terrible right now. We've got showers all weekend. It is 55 degrees, back to the cold of late winter. This weekend we have thunderstorms, showers all weekend, and a high of around 65. So the weather's pretty bad, but some Stanley Cup hockey is playing right now to keep us busy with the rain. So we will be right back to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs as well as the Dallas Stars with Sean Shapiro. So stay tuned to that.
All you veterans, listen up. The sponsors of the May 19th Patriotic Concert being held at 2 p.m. at North Hunterdon High School are giving away free tickets to veterans and their families as a thank you for your service. Concert includes special guest Joe Piscopo and over 100 performers and musicians, including a 17-piece big band, a 32-piece string orchestra, Broadway show Trans-Siberian Orchestra singer, an operatic angel, a rising child star, a choral group, and of course the award-winning Hunterdon Harmonizers. You can call the show's producer, Kevin Gray, at 908-419-9878 for ticket info. Call right now because tickets are limited. The number again is 908-419-9878. That's 908-419-9878. It's going to be a great show, so veterans, get your tickets now.
Welcome to Destination Hockey. My name is David Lazar. I'm your host. We have a crazy slate today. We've got a great interview with Sean Shapiro. We also have some gambling talk and some talk about the Islanders, so stay tuned for that. Gambling, I mentioned it just now. You don't really hear a lot of talk about this, especially in hockey, but it has become a huge issue in recent weeks thanks to the Supreme Court overturning a 25-year-old federal law known as the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act that outlawed sports betting outside Nevada. So this was a huge deal. Sports betting was not allowed in anywhere besides Las Vegas, essentially. And the Supreme Court, with a 6-3 ruling, just outlawed this old law. So basically, you can bet now. So first of all, what does this mean for local Hunterdon County? New Jersey sports books will now be able to take bets via phone or computer, and there will be a slight process of getting these betting stations open. So we will have a slight process, but bets are already being taken over phone and computer for the NHL playoffs, for all these events going on. There will be licensing processes and everything that goes on with any time a new business opens, and you're going to see this gambling take over the sports world and really become just like you go to the game, you get your popcorn, you get a drink. People are going to gamble legally anytime they want. This is a $6 billion industry that will be reinstated, and New Jersey will be leading the charge, which is very interesting because Chris Christie is the one who started this basically crusade to get this law abolished because Las Vegas is allowed to bet. That was the loophole in the law. Las Vegas, Nevada was the only place that was allowed to still do sports betting, but Atlantic City was getting left out because they're similar to Las Vegas, a big city gambling with a lot of casinos and hotels, but they were left out of this loophole where only Vegas was allowed to gamble. So Chris Christie got in on this. The title was transferred to Phil Murphy. But Chris Christie wanted, when he was governor, the Republican governor of New Jersey, he wanted gambling to be legal so Atlantic City could profit. Atlantic City was dying without gambling. People stopped going. Hotels were closing. So Chris Christie really wanted this. New Jersey has been preparing for this day where gambling has been legalized for years. Since 2012, in fact, they started preparing Monmouth Park, a racetrack on the Jersey Shore that is already ready to open windows within a few weeks. So in 2 weeks, Monmouth Park will be open. And this is all because New Jersey has been prepping for this day for a while. So New Jersey, get ready for some gambling. It's going to be fun. You got to be an adult to do it, unfortunately. But it seems like something that is really going to become a centerpiece in sports, and a lot of people are going to be doing it. So that's gambling in New Jersey. How about Las Vegas, the gambling capital of the world? Well, the NHL is unique in the fact that they are the only sports league that put a team in Las Vegas. There are some minor league teams there, but Las Vegas is the only professional sports team that has a team in Las Vegas, and they are thriving. We talk about it almost every week. The Vegas Golden Knights are one of the best teams in hockey and have one of the best fan bases in hockey. So Vegas, the beauty of it was it proved to be distracting for opposing teams. Opposing teams would come in. The Devils were one example. I follow a few Devils players on social media. And two nights before their game, they were posting pictures of themselves at parties and at nightclubs, which, yeah, it's two nights before the game. They're adults. They can do what they want. But that translates to the ice. If you're out partying, I don't care if it's 48 hours, 24 hours, or 2 hours before the game, 48 hours before the game is still within a time frame where you can be affected, mentally especially. So the Devils were out partying. Social media, you could see it. And Vegas proved to be very distracting, and Vegas proved to be one of the best home teams we've ever seen in the NHL. They barely lost a game at Vegas in their inaugural season, so really impressive there. And the Supreme Court's decision, it really paves the way to an entirely different landscape where you see that your gambling's just going to become really, really important, and teams are going to do it, and the league is going to have to counter this. So there are current practices and policies in place to restrict gambling to make it so directly correlated with the NHL. The NHL doesn't want that. That was their main concern with Vegas. They don't want players going out and gambling. They don't want the NFL gambling is just crazy for the Super Bowl. It's how long will the national anthem be? How many pigeons will fly over the game? Like, there are gambling is crazy in the NFL for Vegas. The NHL does not want that. And one really interesting quote is there has been an increase in betting almost entirely related to the Golden Knights. 500-1 odds were the Vegas Golden Knights odds to win the Stanley Cup. People were betting on Vegas just for fun because Vegas was this team that was coming to this new city, this betting capital of the world, and people were like, oh, let's throw $100 at Vegas just for fun. They could have been intoxicated or could have been just a fun little bet. Those people who bet $100 are going to be making thousands thousands, hundreds of thousand dollars just off this little silly bet. The 500-to-1 Vegas odds were kind of skewed because people were betting on Vegas just for the fun of it. 35% increase in hockey wagering this year just because Vegas moved in. So 35% more people are gambling this season than they did last season, and that is solely attributed to Vegas Golden Knights coming into Vegas and hockey is brought to the city. And as I said, there's a Vegas fan, a tourist, coming to a game in Vegas. What are they going to do for fun? They're going to bet on Vegas. So next year, Vegas will have really crazy odds. They'll be really high up there, so that won't matter. But this year, people who bet on that 500-to-1 odds just for fun or bet on Vegas games just for fun are going to be walking away with a huge, huge payday. So many of these bets in the 35% increase were put on Vegas. So betting is, it's an interesting thing. I'm not fully aware of it, what it even means. I definitely don't do it. But you see DraftKings, you see websites like that taking over the gambling world, and now you're going to see sports gambling, traditional sports gambling at racetracks and at these like gambling hubs where people go and just gamble for fun. It's going to start to become a legitimate thing and take over the NHL world, especially with Vegas being there. The Vegas Raiders, or whatever they're going to be called, will be in Vegas soon. But right now, the Vegas Golden Knights have exclusive access to Vegas, and they are going to really be the betting capital of the sports world, because not only will you have betting legalized, you'll have Vegas right there in the center of the world like they are now. So really, really interesting stuff. Doesn't entirely correlate to hockey, but I think it's really interesting to talk about on Destination Hockey, where we talk about all things hockey, how betting will affect the game. And Vegas Golden Knights, this team, the Vegas Golden Knights, being in Vegas with betting legalized, it'll be a whole nother ballgame. So really, really something to point out. And then the Vegas Golden Knights, we talked about them. Why not make it, I don't know, 6 weeks in a row or whatever, where we talk about them? They are just rolling. They are rocking and rolling in their series with the Winnipeg Jets. They had a struggle in game one. The Winnipeg Jets are the better team. That's a fact. In my opinion, they have more star power, better defense. They have good goaltending. Vegas is probably better with Marc-Andre Fleury, but they were just a faster and better team. So what does Vegas do? They come out, they look out match game one. Jonathan Marchessault makes a huge mistake to get the scoring going for Winnipeg, tries a cross the ice pass that doesn't work in Vegas, and Vegas gives up a goal. So what does Jonathan Marchessault do game two? Just absolutely goes off. His resurgence was something I've never seen. This guy is under contract for less than $1 million, was given away by the Florida Panthers to Vegas, and he is just leading the offensive charge for the Vegas Golden Knights, putting up goals, assists, leading the charge. Vegas rolls out four lines, line one, line two, line three, line four, line one, line two, line three, line four. That's how they operate. But every time Jonathan Marchessault was out there, Vegas just looked like a different team. Then you have the defense that is playing so well against Winnipeg. Just really, really great to see Nate Schmidt and players like Shea Theodore, Lucas Spezza, these guys who are outcasts on their old team, really just coming into Vegas, coming into Winnipeg, and just dominating every night and playing solid defense. Vegas plays tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Really, really important game. It's game three. It's the deciding matchup. Whoever wins this, I think, has a 70% chance of winning the series based off past matchups. Huge game. I hope Vegas gets the win. I'm fully convinced they will in front of their home crowd. Tying it up 1-1 in game two was so important. And I'm telling you, Vegas, seeing them in the Stanley Cup will just be a witness to behold. Really, really crazy stuff. I'm happy for them. They're a good team. And I really, really think that they're just going to take over the hockey world with betting as well as on the ice. So that's the Vegas Golden Knights and sports betting. We will be right back with Sean Shapiro of The Athletic to talk about the Dallas Stars. And, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about John Tavares, too. So we will be right back. Please stay with us.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
¿Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
This is Tony Clark, para-planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
Welcome back to Destination Hockey on the Hunterdon Chamber Radio, the voice of business. I am honored to welcome Sean Shapiro onto the show. Thank you so much for joining us today to talk about the Dallas Stars.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Of course. So you have been covering the Stars in some capacity since 2012, and this year was really supposed to be the year. Stacked team, they added in free agency, made some trades last year. Just, it was really the year, and things kind of fell apart. So what happened?
Well, I mean, the Stars had, I'm not even being hyperbolic when I say it, they had a historical collapse where they were a playoff team for up until game 66 and had 80 points through 66 games. And after that point, they had an 8-game losing streak, which basically tanked any chance of them making the playoffs. And everything that could go wrong did go wrong during that 8-game losing streak. And they play in the Central Division, which is so extremely tight, and you can't make mistakes like that. And what could have been a rather good season kind of all fell apart. And now it was, well, things fell apart during that 8-game losing streak. It was something that really kind of exposed some other issues that, I don't know, maybe we should have been able to assess them earlier. Maybe we should have been able to see them coming. Maybe we shouldn't have. But either way, that 8-game losing streak kind of really highlighted some bigger issues and kind of put some things in perspective, and it's something that is obviously fresh in the franchise and the organization's mind right now, because they're trying to figure out, why did something like that happen? Why weren't they able to get the job done? Why weren't they able to get into the playoffs? And I mean, a lot goes back to that 8-game stretch where everything that could go wrong did go wrong and just kind of derailed everything.
Yeah, all the Islanders fans listening from Drive for Five, we're very familiar with 8-game losing streaks as well. The Islanders and the Stars are kind of like mirror images of each other from different conferences. Islanders also went on an 8-game losing streak, had playoff hopes, didn't add at the deadline, and everything kind of fell apart. So these long losing streaks could be detrimental to a team. And Jim Nill said he would talk to each player after this monumental collapse as the offseason progressed. So I'm not sure if you're aware of these talks, how they went, but if you'd just be able to give some insight into those talks.
Well, I don't have exact insight into how every single talk went, but kind of one thing that we kind of know, having talking to some people in the organization, having talked to Jim, talking to some of the players. Essentially, what went wrong was they couldn't finish the games. They weren't finishing the job. They would be in close games and they wouldn't be able to finish the opportunity. There's a game in Toronto where they blew a late lead, where they had a lead, and it just felt like a gut punch, where they let up a goal in the final 45 seconds. So that was one thing that everyone realizes, they weren't able to finish the job in certain games. And then the other thing that really happened too is there wasn't enough depth scoring. And that's the thing that it really came down to with Dallas, where they had their top line, their three big name forwards, Radulov, Benn, and Sagan, and include John Klingberg in there, who had 67 points this year on defense. I mean, those guys, they carried the load for so much of the season, and that's both mentally and physically taxing. And when it got to the point where they were so top heavy and such a one line team that you could slow the Stars, if you could just slow them down, the Stars' depth wasn't there to pick up the slack or to do. We look at the teams that are still playing in the playoffs right now. We look at depth, and we look at how deep they are, and how if you shut down one line, there's still another line that can hurt you. And the Stars their big guns did as much as they could, but they just got overworked. And in the end, that they slowed down a bit, and there wasn't anyone else there to pick up the slack.
Yeah, and Martin Hanzel was supposed to be one of the guys to come in and provide depth, and he's a great player. We all know that, but injuries really hit him this year. He had some catastrophic, potentially long-term injuries. Will he ever be the same player after going through countless surgeries this season?
Well, he had his third back surgery at the end of the season. He had a spinal fusion, which is that's a major surgery. I know it, and that's the Stars are hopeful and they're optimistic that he'll be back and he'll be able to play next season. And that personally, just from a reporting standpoint, I'd love to see him back because it would be a great story to cover.
Definitely.
I'm not as optimistic just because it's something where coming back from a third back surgery is. Third back surgery, a spinal fusion, that's not easy to do. That's something where there's who knows whether he'll actually be able to come back at full strength. And the other thing is we think a lot about Martin Hanzel's game, and we think about Martin Hanzel as a hard-nosed, he's a great penalty killer, he's taking defensive zone face-offs, he's winning a lot of face-offs, and if you think about just the face-offs in general, I mean, what are you doing? You're torquing and you're putting a lot of pressure on your back. So it's one of those things where Stars are they would like to, obviously, in an ideal world, and I'd love to see this ideal world as well. Martin Hanzel is healthy and able to really fully return back to what Martin Hanzel was, not this year, but the year in his final couple of years in Arizona but. Personally, I'm just not as optimistic because I look at the back injury, I look at the back surgery, and I see what the type of job he does when he's effective, and it doesn't look like a good combination for success to me. I hope I'm proven wrong. I really hope I'm proven wrong in that realm, just because it would be. I really don't want anyone to see anyone's career end because of this, or see it kind of titter out like this. But I'm just not as optimistic because you need to. This isn't a minor surgery. This isn't something that people come back from all the time. This is a major injury to come back from.
Yeah, and we really hope he's okay. Obviously, he was one of my favorite players back in the Arizona days, but these injuries are starting to pile up, and a guy like him who's expected to be that second, third-line center, it's going to be really tough for him to fulfill that role. And then you have the defensive issues. Mark Methot was supposed to come in and stabilize the defensive unit. I really loved that trade at the time. I really future second-round pick. It was like, I think it's 2021 or 2019, and a prospect, and you get Mark Methot, a really solid defensive player, but then again, he was bit by the injury bug. Really unfortunate season for him. How is he going to be able to recover after a tough year with injuries?
Methot, from everything that I've, from speaking to Methot, speaking to the Stars, everything from I've understood from that point, he should be good to go coming right. back. He had the knee injury that he dealt with that made him basically miss more than half the season, and he is a I think Massot will should be able to come back to as expected, probably play at a level he played at in Ottawa the year before. The other interesting thing about the Massot injury is that injury actually didn't hurt them nearly as much as it may look on paper, because the Stars were actually a rather good, even though at the end of the season they had a bit of their collapse, they were actually a rather good defensive team for the first 4 or 5 months of the season. And they had, and part of that was because they had Dan Hamhuis and Greg Patterson stepped into roles that they play, kind of stepped into more of that shutdown role that Mark Massot may have traditionally been planned to play. So that's actually an injury the Stars are able to kind of get around a little bit more than more so. Having a healthy Mark Massot back, basically the biggest thing for having Mark Massot back healthy, what it does is it creates options where the Stars actually can look at the summer and decide how they want to approach things, how they want to bring back certain people. Is Dan Hamhuis is an unrestricted free agent this summer. If Mark Massot's healthy, you probably don't need to bring back Dan Hamhuis. Mm-hmm. Massot's a guy who could probably play with a younger player and fit well. He's a guy who you bring back. He's good for that locker room. I actually don't have any doubts about him coming back healthy, even if he does deal with, he's getting older, even if he does deal with some nicks and bruises throughout the season. He's not a guy, I'm not nearly having to worry about him as I do with a player like Hanzel, who I obviously, as we touched on, is coming back from something major that we don't, mm-hmm. there isn't much precedent for coming back on Hanzel's front. While Massot, I think there's confidence there.
Yeah, and just speaking of the player's injury bug, you know, with that, but the coach, you had a new coach, Ken Hitchcock comes in and was supposed to provide leadership, a veteran coach, veteran presence. Did the players respond to his traditional methods really well, especially considering the Stars had some young players?
Yes and no. Hitch was able to connect with some of the leadership group. We saw Tyler Seguin really took major strides this year and became a really, he always had the potential to be, but he really became a true number one center this year. He was an all-around center. He killed penalties. He was on the game late, on the ice late in defensive zone situations. He was a player. Tyler Seguin connected with Ken Hitchcock. John Klingberg was able to connect with Ken Hitchcock. However, then you look at some of the other parts of the leadership group. Jason Spezza and Ken Hitchcock clearly did not see eye to eye. Jason Spezza was already probably on a bit of a decline naturally, but his decline kind of was expedited a bit by Hitch's lack of trust for him. And the other issue, that came into Hitch, as we talked a little bit earlier, just about the lack of depth and the lack of depth scoring, the one thing that kind of came into play is while there were some young players on this team, there was a bit of several young players never really had the opportunity to win some of that trust, to win some of those opportunities. Some did, but those who did not, when they were asked and they were pressured to step up later in the season when the Stars went through that losing streak, they had never gotten that opportunity earlier in the season, and so maybe it never would have become an issue. So Hitch was a great coach. Hitch won a Stanley Cup. He's won the third most games in NHL history. But I think there was a bit of an unwillingness to completely adapt to today's game, and that's ultimately why it didn't work, and that's ultimately why he's not back to coach next season. He did retire, but that's one of the – the kind of the writing was on the wall for both him and the organization that it was time.
Yeah, definitely. You see that with traditional coaches. Al Arbor was one of those guys, just really firm beliefs, and some guys respond to that. Some guys play their hardest. Some guys don't really like that. So what do the Stars do? They take a completely 180 turn, and they hire Jim Montgomery, really successful college coach from Denver, young college guy. He's good with the kids, really established a great program in the NCAA. How will he really just come in and be a polar opposite of Hitch, or will he kind of stay with some of the same staff and stay with some of the like traditional methods that Hitchcock brought over from St. Louis?
Montgomery is interesting because he's a I've been using the word in my head. I've been kind of calling him a bit of a hybrid between the old school and the new school of thinking, because he actually does come slightly from the Ken Hitchcock school. As a player in Dallas, he played for Hitch for a little bit. So, and there are parts of his game where he is a old school. He wants you to be old school. He wants you to be physical, and he compartmentalizes things where it's very task oriented. And I don't think that's an issue at all. That's kind of the old school element he brings. But the other thing that Montgomery really brings is he knows how to work with younger players. That's one thing that is just right off the bat. He coached at Denver. He coached in the USHL. So really, he's never really coached players older than 23, 24, if you think about the oldest possible age for a college hockey player.
Yeah.
And he also brings a style that he played at Denver. He played a style at Denver that I think really will fit and work with his Stars team, and it's kind of fits that new age of where hockey is going. We think about the team still in the playoffs right now. We look at Winnipeg's defensemen; they move the puck really well. The Tampa Bay defensemen move the puck really well. The Stars have some guys who can really move the puck really well if they were trusted and given that chance. And at Denver, Montgomery's teams always did that. The defensemen were trusted to read and react to the plays. They could carry the puck out. They could make that first pass. We look at a guy in New Jersey and Will Butcher, who won the Hobie Baker playing for Montgomery and really kind of had a nice rookie season this year in a puck moving role with the Devils. So Montgomery kind of brings some of that old school. We're going to keep things goal wise. We're going to be strict about these things, but we're also going to, embrace the new age style of play. And the other thing too, and it'll be interesting to see how this translates from the college game to the NHL game. He's also a guy who's been known to kind of create a bit of create culture. And I think that's a word that gets overused, frankly, but it's something that with him, everyone I've talked to about him is they discuss about how he's able to kind of create an atmosphere where everyone is part of something that he's kind of a big, he does a good job of keeping it light and serious at the same time. So it's going to be, he's got a lot of those really good qualities. He's a good coach. It's just going to be fascinating to see how that translates. Does it work at the NHL? Because that's where actions will speak much louder than words. How will this translate?
Yeah, Dave Haxtell comes over from North Dakota, goes to the Philadelphia Flyers. There will be road bumps at first. I'm pretty confident that a coach from college is always going to experience some sort of learning curve. But it worked out for Philadelphia. I think the college coach for Dallas really works out. And the NHL coaching carousel seems to be pretty constant. You've got you could reuse a coach from that was just fired. The Stars were originally linked to Adam Vinlet from New York. You could hire within the organization, or you could do what the Stars did and go with the college coach. I don't know if you agree with me, but I just think he's going to really, you called him a hybrid. I love that term because I think he's going to be able to connect with the old guys, and he's also going to be able to connect with the younger guys.
I hope so. I mean, it's something I hope so because, hey, I've covered that. It's for me, my job is more entertaining when the team is winning.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it would be, he's the type of guy who I think if Jason Spezza is back next season, he's a guy who could kind of fit well with Jason Spezza, just as far as they both look at hockey in a similar way. And he's a guy who Stars have some of those young guys coming up that I think could really benefit from him. The key for Montgomery, and he still has to fill out his staff. We know Stu Barnes, who was on staff last year with Ken Hitchcock, is going to be back. The rest of the coaching staff still has to be finalized and figured out. But I think one thing for Montgomery to kind of make this all work is he does need to bring in, he needs to A, get his leadership on board right away. He's already had lunch with Jamie Benn. He's already talked with Jamie Benn, so he's making strides in that direction. And then he also needs to get a couple, needs to bring, they don't have to be veteran coach, they don't have to be someone that's to be a former head coach, but they need to bring somebody in who's an assistant coach, who's been around the NHL for a while, someone who kind of understands how this is, and somebody that can kind of be there as a sounding board for Montgomery, because while Montgomery can be a hybrid and change things, there are certain things he needs to know about the NHL that he's never done live as the NHL coach. So I think he needs to have somebody there who he is a good confidant for him, who can be, hey, we're in Vancouver. This is where the coach's room is. Something as silly as that, where those something's where he doesn't have that experience. So to have someone on staff who can kind of be there as a sounding board confidant for him to talk about, hey, this is something that you're an NHL coach now, remember this. And that's not a big thing, but that's just something that I think would really help for him to have on staff.
Yeah, that's a great point. You like the complement of the old-time coach and the young coach. They kind of work well together. It seems to work in the NHL, so that's a really great idea. And one thing the new coach could affect is Tyler Seguin. You mentioned it earlier. Great year out of him. He really emerged as that number one center, and he needs a new contract. The Islanders are very eerily familiar with this with John Tavares, and they are completely botching this on all levels. But the Stars, I feel like, have a more structured and sound organization. I think it's more likely that gets done. Do you see the deal getting done before the start of next season, or could it play into the season and start to cause a distraction?
I think both sides want to get something done sooner than later. It's something where both sides, I know, are interested in sitting down. They can't sign anything until July 1st, obviously. But I think Seguin enjoys Dallas. Obviously, he has to talk with the new coach still to kind of get a feel there. Obviously, so that does come into play. But Stars obviously want to bring Seguin back. I get the feeling Seguin wants to be back here. I feel he enjoys playing with Jamie Benn. He really enjoyed playing with Radulov last year. If the Stars do something this summer to kind of help to fix some of the holes, I think that could be kind of the final push he and his representation need to say, okay, yeah, this is the place I want to come back. So my gut is something gets done before the season happens.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the other big thing, and you know all about this, is the other big thing, and the Stars want to avoid it being a distraction of the season, of course. But the other thing is, it's not something that's going to happen July 1st for Seguin, because Seguin's camp, rightfully so, will probably wait to see how the Tavares situation plays out to see what type of market that sets potentially for Seguin.
Yeah, definitely. John Tavares is going to command a Connor McDavid-like deal, and I think Tyler Seguin, especially given this year was so important for him personally, because he showed that he could emerge as that number one center and not just kind of piggyback off Jamie Benn and be a good player but not a great player. He showed he could be an elite player in this league for a long time. So I think John Tavares really affects everything. And John Tavares and the Stars have been slightly linked. I've heard the Stars is one of those weird, like, you hear this with St. Louis and kind of San Jose is that weird, like, sexy pick that could land John Tavares. Do you see the Dallas Stars making a pitch for John Tavares? One, do you see that ever happening? And how specifically would that affect Tyler Seguin if he comes to the team, which isn't likely, but even if he doesn't, how would that affect his next contract?
So knowing Jim Nill, because Jim Nill has made a couple moves in the past where people have gone and been surprised. I wouldn't be shocked if the Stars made a play for Tavares. But the Stars aren't the type of team, I think, that would wait to free agency to do it. You look at how the Stars went and got, how Nill signed, and you look at how they signed Ben Bishop last year. They traded for his rights from the Kings and signed him and got the deal done in May, and signed him to an extension in May to get it done before he ever could go to free agency. A couple years earlier, they did the same thing with Antti Niemi, and obviously that Niemi deal did not turn out well at all. But there's a past history there of Jim Nill likes to work from a position where he can acquire the guy's rights and make a deal before that. So if the Stars were really to make a push for John Tavares, and I think something that probably might, and this is something that may stick out to Tavares as beneficial, is obviously whoever has his rights, being the Islanders right now, is Tavares probably wants that 8 year. That's a scenario where it's more money. It's more money. It's more security, and only the team that has his rights right now can give him. So, if the Stars are to make a play for John Tavares, and I don't know if they will or they won't, but if they were, I think it would come down to something of the Stars willing to trade a draft pick or something, to get his rights to try and get him to an 8-year deal. And to get to the second part of the question, how does that work with Sagan? It can work with Sagan. It can, especially for next year, because Sagan is still on a rather team-friendly contract for next year. Basically, it just becomes a point where Jim Nill has to become very good at managing the cap, and he'll have to make some other decisions on who else becomes expendable, because obviously you can't invest all that money into Ben, Sagan, Tavares, Radulov, Bishop. You can't invest all of that money without losing some other guys. So possible, yes. And that's kind of how I think it would have to happen if the Stars are going to be doing it. It seems like Jim's MO would be trying to trade for the rights and get something done. Is it going to happen? Probably not, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a good point. I think Tavares, the Stars, teams, you got to look at Vegas, and I say this literally every week. You got to look at Vegas. It's become my catchphrase. But when you look at Vegas, they've had success because of depth, and they're not committing too much money to one guy. Obviously, they're an expansion team, and that's unrealistic to expect Dallas to do. But if you give John Tavares that contract, it would really have to fall in their lap, because if you really go out of your way, trade assets, give up your first-round pick possibly to land John Tavares, you're putting yourself in cap hell, unlike literally we've ever seen, because you have Radulov, Bishop, Klingberg, Tavares, Ben, and Sagan. That's half your cap, if not more, so that's tough. I don't know if it happens, but a cheap guy that will be in the lineup soon that really could help that if it does happen is Miro Heiskanen, and he was a third overall pick thanks to the draft lottery. The Stars basically won that draft lottery, moving up so much to get him. He's looking like an absolute stud in one of your articles for The Athletic. I highly recommend getting a subscription for that, by the way. But you said he's a potential Norris Trophy winner. How can you say such a thing for someone so young? And could he make an impact next year, the year after? When will he be up with the Stars?
Yeah, and I mean, and when I said potential Norris Trophy winner, that was in my potential Norris Trophy winner someday. I'm not saying he's coming in and he's a potential Norris Trophy winner next season or the year after, but definitely someday. That's the type of talent we're looking at here with Heiskanen. He won the top defenseman award in Liga over in Finland. I'm not going to try and pronounce the name of the award because I'll butcher it. but he was the top defenseman as an 18 year old in Finland in a very good league. He played World Junior this year. He played the Olympics. He's been having a tremendous showing at World Championships. Everything about this kid is, he looks like an NHL player already. And it's the thing about him that is most impressive is the fact that he looks like an NHL player from in his own zone forward and at the tiny details. I think the one thing that if you really watch a young player and you really kind of notice as they progress is they get better in the tiny details of the game. And Heiskanen's already tremendous in those tiny details. What he does is the tiny stick lifts, the tiny bumps around the net, the tiny little things that you learn with experience from playing in the NHL, he already does to diffuse other teams' possessions, things like that. And then once he has the puck on his stick, he reads the game so well. He's smart. He's confident. He really is a player that is built for the future of the NHL when we look at the puck-moving defenseman. And I think he'll have to win that job in training camp, but I frankly wouldn't be surprised if by middle point of next season he's not already one of the Stars' top three defensemen by December of this year.
Wow, that's a very nice prediction. I think he's a great player, and the Stars got so lucky along with the Flyers just to move up and get such a great player. But I think the defensemen specifically, the Stars had a good defense, but on paper, not the best defense last year. I think he's just going to do wonders for the team. But the Stars also have so many other great prospects. Really, just from reviewing your article of the draft prospects, of the prospects for the Stars, it was really nice to see how many young players they have that could really make a difference in the near future. You've got Dennis Gunnarov, I think I messed that one up, Rupe Hintz, and Jason Robertson, and they all have really good ceilings and can make a difference soon. And for an older team like the Stars, who have some old players and some young players, they can come in and really, really make an impact. So which players out of those I listed and some of the other guys, if you just want to give a brief just outline of the Stars organizational prospects, there's a ton there. And do you see them really making an impact on the team soon?
Yeah, when I take a look at it, there's Rope Hintz really is the one that I think is the most intriguing to me. The Stars don't really have another prospect in their pool like him. They have some interesting forwards, and they have like Gurianov and Robertson and Riley Tufte are all interesting forwards and have some really high potential. But Hintz is really that center they really need, who that type of guy who can drive his own line, can create, can open space for others. And he's a guy who I think with Montgomery, he may have a chance to make the team out of training camp this year. I don't know if he will or he won't, but he's a guy who kind of starts to fill in as you start to look at the future. Okay, maybe this is an internal answer to that top six center position. If not the next season, maybe the year after. A guy like they've got a couple wingers that have some interesting possibilities. And Gurianov, we're still kind of learning exactly what Gurianov is. Obviously, the one thing, Gurianov will always have a bit of a black eye because he was the Stars took him instead of Matthew Barzal. And obviously,
oh, yeah.
A lot of teams will. I mean, it's not as bad as the Boston Bruins having three picks right before and not taking Matthew Barzal, but the Stars had took Gurianov when Barzal was still on the board. So Gurianov is always going to be beat up a little bit by rankings and stuff like that because of that, but he's still a player that's got some intriguing future. He's been playing really well in the AHL playoffs right now. And then Robertson's been a really nice find for them. He was a second-round pick, probably dropped to the second round last year because of his skating ability. And he's a guy who, in an ideal world, he'd be playing in the AHL next year, but because of the CHL-NHL agreement, which we won't get into because we could talk about it for days, but basically, if he's ready for the AHL but isn't allowed to play there yet because of the he's only 19.
Hmm. Wow, so that's a lot there. A lot of teams are envious of that. That's a really good farm system. And it's something you don't see. So they've got a great NHL team that was a disappointment, but a lot of young players up and coming. And Jason Spezza, he's an older guy, definitely not a prospect, but he was a great player, came over from Ottawa, had three good years, I believe, and then had a really tough year last year. 8 goals, 26 points. He was a minus 12 and really was expected to be this, you know, center who was second line center, third line center, and, you know, man a successful line. He had a difficult year. Do you think Jim Montgomery comes in and kind of fixes that, or do you see a prospect or another guy taking his role next year?
I think Spezza will be. My gut says Spezza will be back next year. It's him and Montgomery still have to meet face to face, and so that's obviously going to have a big impact. But my gut right now says Spezza will be back. If not, it would be a situation where the Stars would probably try to move him in a trade. Because there is a market out there for Jason Spezza, even with a down year last year, there still is a market out there for him. But my gut tells me he'll be back next year, and I'm interested to see how he works with Montgomery, because Montgomery has talked about before how Montgomery has obviously used a lot of NHL film in teaching his team at Denver, and he would use film of Jason Spezza sometimes from particularly on power play entries. So my gut says it will be back, but I also wouldn't be surprised if he's gone and traded too, just because that is a very viable option.
Definitely. And that was a great talk about the Stars. I learned a lot. Hopefully your listeners that came over from your Twitter and my listeners learned a lot too. And you've been covering them for a long time, since 2012, and you've had a lot of success in your field. When did you know you wanted to be a journalist, and specifically, when did you know you wanted to work in the Dallas area?
Oh, I never knew. I actually never knew I wanted to work in the Dallas area. That's the funny thing. I was I knew I wanted to be a sports writer since seventh grade. If you believe that, I was Wow. When I was in middle school, I volunteered to work for the middle school paper, which was newspapers put in it kindly because it was really 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper stapled together. My dream was always to work in sports as a sports journalist, and then how I ended up in Dallas is just out of long story short, basically, was working in the Austin, Texas area, working for a small paper there. The state of this industry sometimes isn't that kind, and I was unfortunately laid off. And that was in 2013, and basically I stayed in the area there as a freelancer and covered hockey as a minor, and basically decided then that okay, I'm not going to go take another high school football job or do another sports job like that. I was going to go after my goal here of being an NHL writer, and I worked as a freelancer in the Austin area, and then I. One opportunity led to another, and eventually I had an opportunity opened up in Dallas, and then was in Dallas for a year with the NHL web, a year and a half with the NHL website, and then the Athletic opportunity opened up. And so did I ever plan on staying in Texas forever? No, that was never the plan, but it was it's worked out well enough, and it's definitely didn't go off a map or anything like that.
Well, definitely, you've had a great career, and you did make, you know, the two endpoints of your sports journalism, you know, career. Two of them were NHL.com and The Athletic. And The Athletic is getting plaudits from everyone for just being pure journalism. Writers get free reign and have a lot of freedoms that you wouldn't have on an NHL.com. What are some of the differences between an NHL.com and an Athletic?
Well, the biggest one is obviously it's now I'm working for a truly independent site. And while NHL.com and my editors there were great and I was covering the league, there wasn't the same freedom to dive into kind of A, the super in-depth stuff, and B, not really as much of the opportunity to kind of, I don't want to use the word, I guess I could use the word controversial, but the stuff that kind of sits in that gray area that maybe the league website doesn't want you to cover or isn't really interested in covering. So there's just a ton more, for me, there's a ton of opportunities. I have the tremendous setup where I basically, I don't want to say carte blanche, but it's basically I have an editor who 90% of our conversations are me going, hey, I want to try this idea, or I want to write this story, and it's, hey, go ahead and do it, or let's dive into that. It's something where it lets, I kind of have that creative freedom to find stories that interest me, which is something that I feel really lucky about that. And I'm not trying to be cheesy or talk up my job. I really do feel really lucky about that opportunity.
That's great. Really nice to hear that The Athletic, I've interviewed a lot of Athletic writers. You guys are all so friendly and just putting yourselves out there on Twitter and emails, and just, it's been so great to talk to all of you guys and just hear the freedom. And The Athletic has emerged. I know once Arthur Staple jumped ship, I was on The Athletic. I paid the $60 or whatever it was, because that's how much I was attached to these writers. The Athletic has emerged. They've really taken over the sports journalism world. There was that New York Times article, really are, you know, and really grabbing a lot of attention. How far can this company go? Do you think they could really become one of the leaders, and how long could their success be sustained?
I'd like to hope so. I'd like to believe that there's long-term success here, and I think there will be, because I think there's two things that there's something that people, I at least hope people are starting to realize as we start to get into there's so much information out there. There's a ton of information out there. You can read about teams and from in almost every angle from everywhere. Now, there's so much information out there, but there's also figuring out, and there's also a quality element to it. And I think the one thing that people have noticed and the people that, that readers have noticed here, and something that we've noticed as writers, is that when you're reading The Athletic, it's something that there's the quality is there every time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that, and this is not something that I would ever to poke at any other publication or any other writer or anything like that, but I have, there's a model and there's an expectation that for myself that I in my mind that if I'm writing something that every time I'm feeling that this is worth you investing your hard-earned money for. This is something that it's worth you putting your time and money into investing into our product. And there's a real point of pride with that. And so I think it's something where I think more and more people start to realize what the quality is every day. We have, not to go too deep into the business side of things, but there's on the business side, there's people who start to, we're seeing more and more with the numbers growing and people nationwide subscribing. So I think it is sustainable. It's something where I think it's sustainable because it's something that it's a product that people believe in, and I think that's the main reason is because it's delivering something that people want to read and something that people really want.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely know I just go on there for fun. Not a lot of emails that nagging you to read. It's not forced. It's just you pay and you really crave the content. And I know they've been expanding to so many markets. Vegas recently has just been great to read about Vegas, and I'm just really admire what The Athletic does and just how nice all the writers have been to me specifically. It's been really great to be able to speak to people from all over the country about the teams they cover and the stars today. I just want to thank you again because this was great to talk to you about.
Well, hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Of course. And just one last piece of advice before I let you go. A lot of young people my age, 18, 17, listen. If you have one piece of advice for a young journalist, what would it be?
It's going to be a two-parter. One is going to be always work hard, which is really cliched, and I put it, but it's true. And then the other one is people in this industry aren't that scary. And that's something that I learned. If you don't be afraid to reach out to people, don't be afraid to talk to people, because it's something where the worst thing that can happen is someone doesn't respond to your email. So that's kind of my biggest piece of advice is if this is something that field that you want to go into, if this is something where you want to really get into it, if there's a writer you like or there's send them an email, send them a direct message or on Twitter or whatever. I think that's the thing where I think that would be my biggest piece of advice. Don't be afraid to reach out. And the worst thing that happens is someone doesn't respond to you, and then you can just send somebody else an email.
Yep, exactly what I did to you. I respected your work, and I have this show, and I think this was a great fit. You really educated local Hunterdon County, New Jersey, my Islanders fans that are listening, and as well as the Stars fans. This was so great to talk to you. And again, thank you so much for giving up your time today to come on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, and best of luck with your show.
Thank you so much. I hope to stay in touch. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was a great interview. We talked about so much about the Stars. I learned so much. Really thankful Mr. Shapiro was able to come on. Really respect his work with The Athletic, and it was just really nice to talk about a new fan base, a new team, and a team that is really, really similar, eerily similar, I'd almost say, to the Islanders. They're in the West. Expectations are high. They're in a playoff spot, just like the Islanders were, have a few good games, and then what do? Just like the Islanders at around the same time, 8 games in a row. And if you could see me in studio right now, I am pointing my fingers down because both teams went from really high up there, great organizations, not exactly the Islanders, but really well run in that they cared about the team on the ice that year. They stacked up the offenses. They had okay defenses, and then both just plummeted in the exact same fashion. And for the Islanders plummet on Drive for 5 blog, our site, we had an article about why the Islanders plummeted, and we think it has to do with some sports psychology about the Long Island area and about the way the Islanders organization is structured. I have never read a better article on this site or on any site. I just read this and was so impressed with Ben. So please, Ben wrote it. Just you could tell he's just so educated on this topic. I beg you, seriously, it's that good, to check out driveforfive.blog. Just put it, Google Drive for 5, put in the URL, and read this article about sports psychology in the New York Islanders. You will learn a lot more than I learned today about the Stars, probably, because it was a great article. So again, thank you, Mr. Shapiro, for coming on the show. We had a great talk. And next week, we'll be back with Colin Stevenson. So thank you for listening to Destination Hockey, and have a great day.